Blog Talk Radio.
World of Ink Network's newest show, Families Matter. I'm your host, V.S. Grenier, and I wanted to also introduce my co-host, Keisha Burcham. It's 6 p.m. Eastern Time on June 15th, and we'd like to say it's really an honor to be here with you today. The Family Matter show is new. It's a monthly program here on VTR's World of Ink Network. Our show today is on bullying and how kids can confront a bully, work through this ever-growing problem, and of course, we're going to talk a little bit toward the end of the show about if you have a bully for a child as well. I'd like to invite you to join in and share your own personal experiences or ask questions of myself or Keisha. The phone number to call is 714-242-5259. And welcome to the show, Keisha. It's great to have you here with me on our new show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking me. It's delightful to be here.
Now, most of the listeners, I'm sure there's some new listeners who don't know much about me, so I'll say who I am, you know, a little bit more about my background. But since you are our newest host here on the World of Ink Network, can you just kind of share a little bit of your background with our listeners so they know kind of where what your personal experiences are and why basically we have you on the show with us as as a host to be able to talk about, you know, family issues and issues that, you know, children and teens face nowadays?
Yes, well, I'm an educator first and foremost. I have a master's degree in school counseling, and I have, well, basically in education with the emphasis in school counseling. I've been in education for 23 years. I am an LP life coach. I'm a trainer in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens. I've done lots of, in 23 years of school counseling, I've been to probably more in services than I cared to go to, but many, 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 and have participated in all kinds of trainings on bullying and getting along and the effects of bullying and conflict resolution, which we can talk later about, but are sometimes confused one for the other. I have one grown daughter and 3 grandchildren, and I write for Examiner regularly in Nashville for the parenting part of that. I'm the Nashville Parenting Examiner. And I guess those are my credentials for being here.
Again, and those who might be new to the World of Ink Network here on VTR, on Blog Talk Radio, my name is Virginia, but my pen name is V.S. Grenier. I'm a children's author and editor. I'm a chief editor for Halo Publishing, and I'm the owner and founder of Stories for Children Publishing, which puts out Stories for Children magazine. So besides being a mother of 3, I deal a lot with children's writing and work with a lot of authors and on articles that deal with, you know, not just learning articles, but, you know, parenting articles and self-help articles that we put out on the Stories for Children blog, Families Matter, which is what our show is named after. And you can always find out more about myself and Keisha as well. In the show description page, you'll actually see the links to Keisha's Examiner page where you can learn more about her and read her articles, and then, of course, my personal page as well, so, and our Family Matters blog. So that's who we are. And so let's kind of, Keisha and I were kind of talking before the show started, and so we kind of want to start the show off at the beginning to kind of talk about some of the different ways kids are bullied. I mean, one of the biggest things I know parents are seeing right now, of course, is in the social networking, especially on places like MySpace and Facebook, where, you know, a lot of slander-type posting happens because people think because you're at a computer, you can kind of hide behind the computer screen and say what you want about people. But I know there's other, you know, places that, that kids are bullied besides, of course, in school. What have you seen, Keisha, pretty much when it comes to bullying, like the different ways that you've seen it pretty much taking place?
Well, I would say those are the top two places. I would say at school, whenever you have groups of children together, there are pecking orders established and such, but whenever you have groups of kids, just about anywhere, you might get a hint of it. Definitely at school. And the cyberbullying part of it is so still somewhat new and unexplored, and with all the things that, that kids do behind their computer and the mean and cruel things that they do, they're sometimes one step ahead of us as far as, you know, finding ways to stop that, because with the internet there's so much secrecy. I mean, you can be somebody else and write these things, and we, you know, we're kind of a step behind trying to find out, okay, who really did it. There are kids that will create entire pages devoted to the hatred of some child, and people will post, and there can be pages and pages and pages of just hate stuff. I think we're still in a process of trying to get a handle on that, because electronics, they move so quickly, and there's something new all the time. They get ahead of us.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because, I mean, I know that probably, you know, a lot of people have heard, because I know it wasn't here in Utah where I'm at, I know it wasn't in your state there in the South, but I remember that they had thought that a daughter was of a woman was actually, like, posting, I can't remember if it was a blog or if it was on, I think it was on MySpace, but was posting some, like, really awful stuff about one of the girls in their neighborhood, and it turned out to be the mom. And I was like, wow.
Posing,
you know, that's
somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that there's been a lot of TV movies addressing that. And recently I just watched a few months back, I can't remember the name of the movie. I know it had an A in it. I can't remember if it was earning an A or getting an A or something. Oh, Easy A. Thank you. My son's in the office with me. The movie Easy A, where the girl kind of used the example of what happened in The Scarlet Letter as a basis to, like, kind of test out what would happen in basically in her social group at high school to see what kind of happened. And, you know, basically she ended up becoming an outcast, and all kinds of stuff was being said about, which none of it was even true at all. But it's amazing how fast rumors spread, and it's such a sad thing. And, like, you know, exactly what you're saying, you never know who's saying it. And I know that there's a few blogs that have popped up over the years where you can basically go and tear people down on the blog anonymously.
Yeah, well, the girl bullying tends to be the most vicious of all, really. A lot of back many years ago, we thought about bullying. We thought about boys hitting each other and pushing and calling people sissies and things like that, and it's really gone so far beyond that. There's actually, girls tend to, it's called relational aggression with young ladies, because they don't tend to attack physically. They attack other girls' social relationships and social standings. So, like you said, they can make somebody an outcast. And most, you know, and guys are like this to some extent, but girls have a real need to belong to a group and to be part of the girl group. And they sometimes have to, I don't know if you've read the book Queen Bees and Wannabes, but the girl group tends to operate sort of like a beehive. And there's a queen bee, and then there's the main helper bee, and then there are all these worker bees. And they all have to cooperate, or they might be tossed out of the hive. And sometimes it's better to join in with something you really might not agree with than to risk being tossed out and being the one that then the cruelty is directed at. And it can be things that appear ridiculous. I think a lot of times with girls it boils down to jealousy, or, you know, somebody's boyfriend started liking somebody else and the girls turn ugly. Sometimes it's just those typical things, like you're different in some way. Sometimes it is the girl who has a disability, or sometimes it is the girl whose family doesn't have a lot of money, or some kind of physical feature. But sometimes it's the girl that happens to be prettier than the others, or the girl who happens to have the boyfriend or the former boyfriend of the queen bee. There are all those kind of dynamics, and they will attack the girl's social standing. And in a teenage girl, tween girl's life, that is her existence, her friends and her social standing at school.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, I have kids that vary in age. I have a teenager and I have a toddler. And my middle daughter, this last past school year, started school and was in kindergarten. And, you know, I remember somewhat of, you know, and I don't think parents really think about it, because, like, oh, are you in the in crowd? Are you in, you know, the popular clique or whatever they want to call it? But, and I remember being around, because I moved around a lot as a kid. And I remember, you know, still in elementary school, that there was those, you know, cliques that would form, especially amongst girls. But I was really surprised with my daughter this year in kindergarten, because, you know, there's an 8-year span between her and her older brother, who's the teenager. And I was really surprised when I would go on school field trips, and there was already in her class a clique of girls that had formed. And there was most of the girls in the class were in the little clique, but there were a few that were kind of on the outside, and my daughter was pretty much on the outside of it. And I happened to just get one of the leaders of the little clique in her class, and we were going on this field trip to the farm. And so I had my daughter, I had one of the little ringleaders, and then one of the girls that tends to hang out with the little clicky girls, but, you know, was friends with my daughter. And I kid you not, the little ringleader leaned over to my daughter's friend and said, "Hold my hand, because I don't want to hold, you know, her hand, my daughter's hand." And she didn't think I heard her. And I heard her, and I, of course, you know, called her by her name and said, you know, "That's not very nice." And she just looked at me completely stunned that I, you know, was correcting that behavior. I'm starting to think, my gosh, you're in kindergarten, and you're already, you know, weeding out who belongs and who doesn't. And it's mm-hmm. such a sad thing to see that it's happening at such a young age. And I don't think a lot of parents realize it. They think, oh, you know, they're just learning to. No, it's starting literally.
Yes.
In the younger years.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they are learning. They're learning it early enough, but by the same token, learning it that early means you can stop it that early. And that's
yeah.
one of the keys when, you know, cause like you said, you kind of want to look over that, it's just little stuff. You know, little stuff becomes big stuff. And kids are very formative when they're in those kindergarten years and earlier. And they're really learning some of their values, and they're learning how to get along in this world. And if it's okay to exclude and to treat others differently and to say certain things like that child said in front of you and other things like that can be said, it sets a precedent that tends to carry on. And by the time they're in third and fourth grade, that's just how they interact. And you know, you said she kind of looked at you funny, and sometimes it's because you heard them, but sometimes they really don't get it that it's that. They don't understand empathy a lot of times. And most mm-hmm. things that you read and that you study about bullying tell you that the big lacking factor in somebody who's a true bully, really trying to hurt, not just conflict, but really trying to hurt, and this is also true of rapists and murderers and many violent criminals, they lack empathy. They just don't understand how it might feel to be the victim of something like that. And that's one of the things that, as an educator, we focus on teaching them early on. How do you think that person feels? Some kids actually have to be taught empathy. That seems to be the thing missing when you deal with people who just treat others so cruelly without any regard.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I'm going to totally bash on my generation, and I'll probably get hate mail later from a bunch of people about it. But, you know, I'm from Generation X. I'm an Xer. And, you know, I know we're a very small, you know, generation, because Generation Y is a little bit bigger, because Generation X tends to be the few kids that were born from the baby boomers who happen to get, you know, married in the earlier 20s and, you know, mid-20s. And didn't wait till they're, you know, later in their late 20s or 30s to have kids. And so we're the small niche. But I think as I've watched my kids grow up and I see some of the trends that are happening, and I used to work in fashion, and I've worked in some, you know, in some different companies. And one of the main companies I worked at was Hot Topic. And I really saw this a lot when I worked there, because it was a trend-setting store, and it was at a time when, you know, because Generation X was the generation that started the whole grunge look, and really, you know, kids breaking. I mean, I know kids in every generation have always tried to break out and form their own identity, but it seemed like the early 90s was really a time when kids started to kind of do what the kids in the 70s did, really, you know, rebel against their parents and have their own identity crisis kind of thing.
Yes,
and so I was working at Hot Topic.
Like shock value.
What was that?
They like the shock value.
Yeah.
Shock value is totally different.
Exactly, because and the thing is a lot of the kids, you know, during the, they literally went from the 80s punk era to the grunge, and so, and I grew up in that era, and so I started watching when I worked at Hot Topic, and by this time I was in my mid-20s to my late-20s, and already had my first kid, and I remember watching how people would react, you know, as buyers. I mean, not all the buyers at Hot Topic dressed like you see, well, I mean, Hot Topic's changed dynamically from what it was like back when I worked there now. But you know, at the time, you know, there's a lot of people had piercings and the colored hair and tattoos, and you know, it was definitely the shock value. And it was interesting, kind of watching the dynamics of it all. And I started thinking about it as I was watching the people I worked with, and when we'd go on buying trips, or when we were, you know, when we got together for, you know, company gatherings and stuff. And I started noticing that. The biggest thing was with Generation X, at least, that I've noticed as I've gotten older, that because we came from the baby boomers, and I see this somewhat with my sister's in Generation Y right behind me, and I see it with her too. We kind of grew up with the golden spoon in our mouth, and now we're all, and now Generation X especially, and Generation Y now is at the age where they're starting to, you know, we're married, we're having kids, or, you know, for Generation X, we are married and have kids, but because we were kind of raised to be selfish in many ways, I think that we tend to, unfortunately, if you're talking about with empathy, we're so self-absorbed from the way our parents were. I'm not saying the whole generation is this way, but the majority of them are, that they want to take their me time. So they're not really teaching their kid a great example by, the, you know, when their kids need their help or, you know, want their time. It's like, well, no, you know, mom or dad, you know, I'm doing this and, you know, you need to, to go play. And so, unfortunately, to some degree, these kids aren't learning that because they're seeing their parents being selfish, so therefore they're being selfish. And so I kind of wonder if it's like a chain reaction, because it just seems like...
Well, maybe, you know, there is that whole time that we went through, which I think is what you're talking about, where everything was all about self and love yourself and give yourself a break and do things for yourself because you work so hard. And you know, really, God is in yourself. And you were self, and perhaps we went overboard and became extremely self-absorbed, and so then you're right, didn't really take the time to look around at, you know, hey, it's not just all about self. There, you know, I got to get along with other people. It takes all these people to make the world go around, and maybe self doesn't need to be quite as paramount, and I need to consider others.
No, and that's what I'm wondering, because, I mean, you know, and that's, and it's great because my sister is literally 14 years younger than me, and like I said, so she's in Generation Y, and I watch her, and I'm starting thinking, it's kind of funny because, you know, my parents have kind of made comments a few times because my dad's remarried, and so it's him and my stepmom, and they're kind of like, you know, she's thinking about, because she just recently got married, she's been married for a little over a year, well, maybe it's 2 years now, and so, of course, you know, she's already starting to do the whole, because she's in her early 20s, you know, oh, I want to have a baby, and they're just like, I don't know if you're ready to have a kid. I'm afraid because she loves sleeping in, that you're going to sleep in and the poor baby's going to sit in its crib crying in a wet diaper, hungry, and you're not going to wake up because you want your nap. And I started thinking about that. I'm starting thinking, not that I'm like this with my last two, but I know with my first, my son, I ended up being a single mom with him. So, of course, I had to, unfortunately, be a little bit more self-absorbed because I was the sole provider for him, and I had to make sure that I was doing things I needed to bring money into the house. But there were times, because I was 21, I had him, that I was still at 21, and because I grew up, you know, like I said, you know, pretty much anything I want my parents gave me, that it was a really big, rude awakening to all of a sudden have this little person demanding my time. It was hard. It was really hard. And sometimes I sit there and think, you know, did I teach you the right, you know, I look at him now, you know, now he's 15, I'm starting to think, did I teach you enough, you know, proper life lessons versus negative ones that you're going to be okay as you get older? you know, I really worry about that sometimes because I know I wasn't always the greatest example. And unfortunately, kids, you know, grow up on that. And that's what I was going to say about, you know, growing up during the 80s. I mean, I know bullying's always been around, but it seems like in the 80s, it really kind of skyrocketed in many ways, at least when I was in school. I mean, I saw some really just bad things happen. I mean, I even had friends turn on me and spread some nasty rumors. And I'm starting to think, unfortunately, a lot of people I still know, and now we're in our 30s, and I mean, we're in our mid to late 30s, and I look at them, and they still do stuff. I'm starting to think, and you're teaching this to your kids by your actions. No wonder why your kids think this is okay.
That's true. I think sometimes we think it's kid stuff and that they're going to grow out of it. And then you and I both know women and adults who still behave in that manner. I dealt with a lot of bullying when I was in school. I was part of the popular crowd, but being a part of that popular crowd, you always had to worry about staying there. And you had to cooperate with things you didn't necessarily want to cooperate with. And sometimes, if you didn't do things just right, then you were tossed out for a while. And maybe you weren't invited to the next party. It's a very volatile place to be if you're not the queen bee and you're not one of the top members of the group. And they can do some really cruel things. I can remember one of the things that, and I tell this story to my students. I'm quite sure these girls aren't listening, even though I still know them today, but there were three of us that went to school together from kindergarten all the way through high school. And we were kind of the three musketeers, but, you know, three girls don't always mix. Usually they're two together and one gets left out, and then, you know, the other two are together and one gets left out. And it's never a real peaceful threesome for whatever reason. And I happened to have the same birthday as one of these girls. And everybody knew it. That was kind of our little thing. Oh, we have the same birthday. How cute was that? Well, one year, the third of our little threesome, who did not share the birthday with the other two, decided that we were going to all give a big surprise birthday party to the other girl. And it was my birthday, too, and she knew it, and everybody knew it. And, I was kind of shocked. You know, I'm like in the sixth grade, and I'm thinking, well, it's my birthday, too, but I've been asked to assist in this surprise party by my best friend, for my other best friend. But because I didn't want to be left out of the group, I didn't say a word. Okay, I'll do it. Well, when I went home and told my mother that I was supposed to bring chips to the party, one of the only times my mother ever stepped in. She was livid. She said, they know and their parents know. It's your birthday, too. And if the party can't be for both of you, you're not going. Well, I was devastated. I wanted to go anyway because I didn't want to be out of the group, you know. I didn't go to the party. Looking back now, mother did the right thing, and I wonder why the little girl's mother who knew even allowed it. It's just one of those things I'll never really get. And you know, I did recover, and, you know, the next week everything's fine. You go on like nothing happened because you don't want to be ousted. But those kinds of things go on and kind of go under the radar, and it's something that I guess that I will always remember. It's probably the worst experience I ever had with bullying, other than a few physical things. But that's the one I remember. You know, that's the one I carry because it was such a lack of empathy, not only for all the people, but even the adults that were involved. I mean, we had been friends, you know, you're talking 11, 12 years, Girl Scouts, school. It wasn't any oversight that it was my birthday, too, by anybody.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, I guess nobody in the whole crew had any empathy. I'll never understand that, but I'll always remember it. And girls go through, and I'm sure guys, too, very similar types of things. But that's one of those relational aggression things, letting me know my place was not at the top. Because the other girl happened to be the queen bee.
Yeah.
You know, just one of those experiences.
Yeah, I always tell my son, because him being the oldest, especially now he's in high school, and his dad's funny because he always backs me up on it as well, and I think they're always kind of shocked because I grew up and I was a tomboy growing up, and you know, I had a few close girlfriends as I got older into my junior high and high school years, and those handful, and I literally mean a handful of like five, I still talk to occasionally off and on now in our adult years, especially now that, you know, we have Facebook and email and you know, instant messaging and stuff. It makes it a lot easier, but I pretty much hung out with guys. And it's funny because now that I'm an adult, and I used to work in fashion, and I work in writing, and I tend to be surrounded by a lot more women. And I have a lot more women friends. And but I watch my son, and, you know, like when he has a girl, he's recently had a girlfriend and stuff, and we'll be talking. I tell him, I said, you know, it's so true, the comment about, you know, a woman scorned is someone you don't want to mess with. I mean, they're, you know, hell hell fury on you. And I told him, I said, that's why when I was growing up, I really didn't like her. I said, even now, I said, I'm really picky about who I'm friends with because I don't trust most women. I think females are probably the worst when it comes to backstabbing and really, you know, tearing down, like you said, the social structure. But
yeah, I think many can be. I think the flip side of that, though, is if you have a true female friend, and I've been blessed to have many of those, there's nothing better. But yes, There does seem to be a whole lot more backstabbing among women than men. You know, with men and young men and boys, they tend to be a little more straightforward. They have an issue, somebody hits somebody, somebody beats somebody up or whatever, and it's done. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
Girls, things tend to go on, and they tend to, you know, continue to backstab and continue to be catty and snaky. They don't seem to let things go. Case in point, I still remember the fifth grade thing. We often don't let things go. And like you said about a woman scorned, particularly when it's something that involves a man or something, it's just not let go of many. And guys tend to, I think, after a while, just they tend to move on better somehow. They get their aggression out, and sometimes more physical. And you know, I see that a lot in school. Our guys don't typically run around spreading rumors and gossip about other guys. They don't, like, invite everybody but one guy to the party. If their parent says you have to invite everybody, they're fine, we'll invite everybody. And if they have an issue, they fight it out, and it's done, and it's over with. But the girl things seem to just drag on and on. I think there's a certain pleasure in the drama of it. I mean, I think a lot of times, I know in my office I get little girls that seem to almost live for the drama. They like nothing better than to gather a whole bunch of them up over some rumor or something, pull more in. Several of them thoroughly enjoy crying, and those that love to comfort, love for the others to cry so they can comfort, and just have this big, tearful scene. And when you get to the bottom of it, usually you find there's very little there. There was a lot of enjoyment of the whole process sometimes, just the drama of it all. And I think that's probably where the term drama queen comes from, because they do seem to like the drama. They don't want to move on from it.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I mean, with my son, I've seen some bullying, you know, through the years with boys when it comes to my son. But like you said, I mean, usually it's something that it doesn't last very long. They tend to, you know, put things in the little compartments and let it roll off their shoulders a lot easier. And I think that's why I like hanging out with guys. And I tend to actually be more that mind frame myself personally. The worst thing I ever saw, and it's so funny because when the Harry Potter books came out, it made me totally think of this one experience that happened with my son. We had moved him from one school to another school because we had him in private schooling, and so we changed him to school because we wanted to be in a school that would continue into high school for him, and the school that he was in currently wasn't like that. So when he started at this other school, he was a new kid, and unlike when you're a new kid as a girl, it's a little bit harder to get into the different crowds. Well, you know, being the new guy, in there, of course, the guy starts sizing you up right away to see where you fit. And there was this one group, because my son tends to be built very much like very stocky, more of like a sports kind of build. And so, of course, all those kind of guys wanted him to hang out with them. Well, my son isn't into sports. He's actually more of the computer techie kind of kid, and so he was hanging out with more of, you know, what you consider to be like the geeks, you know, that tend to be more skinny and scrawny, and of course he doesn't look like that at all. And and this one kid was just like, why do you keep hanging out with these kids, you know, you should come hang out with us, you know, these guys are basically a bunch of dorks. And my son looked at me, he's like, because I like them and they have the same interests as me. And a few years later, of course, the Harry Potter books came out. This was when he was in the like fourth, fifth grade kind of things. And then the Harry Potter books came out, and I was reading them. And it was interesting because, you know, in the very first book of Harry Potter, you know, Malfoy walks up to Harry and says, you know, introduces himself and tells him that, you know, basically he can introduce him to the right types of, you know, wizarding sort. And, you know, Harry turns around and makes the comment, I think I can figure that out for myself. And I'm sort of thinking, oh, my gosh, that's so my son. It's exactly basically what he told these kids. You know, don't tell me who to be friends with. And I was so proud of him because he wasn't afraid to be himself. And so I guess my question to you, because, I mean, that's the one thing I've instilled in my kids, you know, don't say things or do things to fit in. Be yourself. And if kids like you, they'll want to be your friend. You know, don't worry about it. The right people will flock around you. But I know that's a hard lesson to teach. So what can kids do? Because, I mean, sometimes they'll do that and they'll still get
things out. And sometimes they're unsuccessful. I think that advice is good advice, and it starts to come true a little later. I think in high school, kids start to gravitate towards others like them, and it's not so hard. I think in middle school, when you're finding your place, that's the hardest time of all. Like you said, you know, he didn't fit in the group that he looked like he should fit into. And, you know, we like to think if you just are yourself, you will tend to attract others like you. And in a perfect world, it works that way. And I think more as adults, it works that way. I think the thing that you can teach your kids, and the most important thing, because we cannot control other people, we can only control our response to them. I think the best thing you can do is assertive. Teach to have a toddler, right? I think you've got to start early on teaching children how to stand up for themselves. Not in an aggressive, you know, mean spirited way, but
sorry,
I think you
laughing.
Have. Pardon?
I was saying, I'm sorry, I was passing off my little one. She was climbing up on me.
Well, I think that assertiveness is a big key early on. Teaching not just how to stand up for yourself when it comes to other people, but just little things. Asking for what you want, you know, speaking up when it's time to speak up. A lot of times in the early grades, it's the shy child that gets bullied because kids seem to have this radar that says, that's a shy person. They do not speak up. If I want to feel powerful, I can run over that child because they're not going to say anything. And again, it's the little things. Encourage your child to ask questions in class when they don't understand. A lot of kids, I get them in sixth grade, they're not doing well in school because they're too scared to ask a question. And when you stop and say, what's the worst thing that can happen if you ask the question? And most of them are like, well, people might laugh. Well, they might, but chances are they really won't. Usually the fear's bigger. And so what if they do? The teacher's going to yell at me. I've yet to find a teacher, and I'm sure it happens. There may be teachers that get exasperated if you ask the question they just answered. But you know what? You ask it. And the more you step out and just ask for what you need, the easier it becomes. I remember when I was in fifth, sixth grade, whatever, my mother would have me call and make my own dentist appointments and doctor's appointments, which seems like such a little silly thing, but you learn it's kind of a taking care of yourself thing. You learn, yes, I can do this. I can make my appointment. I can ask this question. If somebody laughs, I still got the question answered. I move on. When somebody says something to me, I can say, hey, that wasn't very nice. You know, I don't have to get all mad and in their face and give them what they baited me for. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to hit them and make a big scene. The little things, if they start to become assertive early on, just speaking up, I think that helps them all along. I know when I observe in school, the kids that are very self-assured, that speak up, that and some of this is just innate gifts I think we're probably given, that some of us are just better able to stand up and we just have self-assurance and nobody knows where it came from, we just have it. Those kids rarely ever get bullied. The kids that get really bullied are the quiet ones that tend to be alone because, you know, there's safety in numbers. If you're all by yourself, you're an easier target. If you don't say much, people assume that you're not going to. And I just feel like those kids get sometimes singled out, not because there's really anything wrong with them. They're just quieter, and they won't stand up. And even as adults, we know those people, that when it comes to the time to ask for a raise at work, they just simply can't do it. It's terrifying. Yeah. Well, if you learn early as a child how to talk to people about what you need and speak up for yourself, as an adult, things become easier. You know, me and my kids at school, we do role plays about asking for an allowance and then maybe asking for a raise in your allowance. You know, the worst thing your parents can do is say no. But if you start early on asking for what you need, again, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, a lot of kids don't realize. I don't know what they think is going to happen when they ask for something. Well, the same thing is with other children. You know, what if you just said, hey, you keep messing with me every day. I've had about enough. Now you're going to need to stop. And that seems like such a simple thing to say, but for some kids, uttering those words, it just doesn't happen. So they go home and they tell their parents every day about how mean people are treating them. The parents get tired of hearing it. They call the school and want to know why we haven't done anything. And it's our first clue that anything is going on because the child was not assertive enough to even let us know. And we have all kinds of really clever ways to protect a child's anonymity for telling. You know, I talk to them about it a lot because I talk a lot about bystanders, and that's a whole other show as far as the kids. You know, the bystanders have a lot of power. They know who the bullies are. They know where and when it happens. But anything can be reported at school to a teacher or a principal or a counselor, such as myself. Write an anonymous note. You know, Billy Bob's being bullied in the bathroom every day after school, after lunch, by this person, this person, this person. Don't even sign your name. I can strategically show up in the bathroom, or a male teacher can, or I can simply call all the kids together and say, hey, we saw this on the camera, and I've got cameras actually to prove it, or I can say, you know, I've had some teachers tell me they've heard this, and, you know, the child that told is never identified. And I think that's their big fear, that, you know, somebody's going to call them a snitch or this or that and the other. And then there are those with so much self-confidence, they don't care if they're called a snitch or not. They're coming in. And if the kids that were doing the teasing come to them and say something about it, they say, that's right, I stand up for people. Now, you don't have a lot of those, but you had some of them. And they never get bullied. You know, those are the little heroes that run around that will stand up with no fear at all. But I think assertiveness is huge on so many levels, not just bullying, but as a life skill. So that's, I have an article, a whole article I did about that on the Examiner page because I just think it's so important. I run into adults, like I said, that don't know how to be assertive and ask for what they need.
No, I totally agree with you on that, Keisha, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, how assertiveness is important. And my husband and I, it's kind of funny because you usually expect the, and I'm not saying my husband isn't an assertive person because he is an assertive person, but I always look at life that there's, you got three personality types. You have your alphas, your omegas, and you have your betas. And to me, a beta is, you know, obviously someone who can either be an alpha if they need to be or an omega if they need to be. They play the middle ground, which is really what my husband is, which is why we work, because I'm definitely an alpha. I'm a very strong alpha, which I know is rare for females to be. And so I'm a very assertive person. I have and I'm not going to say I don't get scared, because I do. I mean, I walk into a lot of situations where I know nobody, and I've moved around a lot, so you'd think that I wouldn't be intimidated by that, but I do. I mean, I've had to travel to places I've never been, and I've had to travel by myself to go there, and I'm terrified inside, but I am able to put up that assertive front right away, you know, just that's just the natural front I have, so I tend not to get singled out too much by people for that reason. You know, I'm sure people talk about it behind my back because they end up thinking I'm stuck up is the reverse effect of what ends up happening. But I tended never to be singled out as a kid growing up. And I kind of floated between groups and stuff. And I was really big about pushing on my kids. And my mom is an omega. She's definitely one of those people that, you know, has welcome across her chest and wipe her feet all over me. And love her dearly. And she's a great lady. I mean, she really is. And we butt heads a lot because she watches how I raise my kids, and she's like, you're so domineering, and you expect so much from your kids, and you've made your son grow up so fast, and now you're doing it to your daughters, and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm starting to think, and I was just listening to how you're talking about how your mom, you know, had you, you know, call and make appointments with, and I do that with my son, and because he tends to be a beta. He can flip-flop between the two, but he tends to be more omega just because with you know, obviously when you're a kid, it's just usually the role you end up playing unless you want to be fighting with your parents constantly. And so when he does have to step into that more aggressive alpha role, I get on him. I'm just like, you got to speak up. You got to stand up. You can't, you know, exactly you said, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't like something that's happening, you know, go tell the person. You know, get up in their face.
Yeah, I mean, the worst that you can do is disagree. You know, and that's perfectly okay. I think sometimes, like what you just said about sometimes you'd be so afraid inside, but you know, you're going to these new places, you had no choice, you had to go. You were probably using maybe something, I call it, you know, fake it till you make it. You've heard that, I'm sure, many times before, but a lot of times just put front of faking it. You know, you may be shaking inside. I think there was the Walt Disney thing about whistle a happy tune, and, you know, it convinces me that I'm not afraid. And there's really so much truth in that. Physical research will back up the fact that when you take on a certain physical persona or characteristic, your brain will actually release the chemicals that will complement that. And for example, when you're really, really depressed and sad, you tend to sit with your shoulders down and your head down, and your body language tells everybody around you that you're depressed, and your body's chemicals will respond to that. You look depressed, you act depressed, your chemicals are depressed. But if you decide, you know what, I'm going to hold up my head, my chest, I'm going to smile, I'm going to act like I'm happy, as I'm even going to smile. When you do that, even though it's fake to start with, your body will actually start releasing chemicals as if you were happy. And you can really adjust your mood to a certain extent just by the brain power of telling yourself. And then you can use that when you're scared. I may be shaking on the inside, but I'm going to look confident, and I'm going to walk up here, and I'm going to ask for what I need, and I may be a nervous wreck. And the more you do it, and the more you realize, well, you know what? The world didn't crash down on my head. Nobody slapped me. Nothing horrible happened. It gets easier and easier and easier. But there's a lot to be said for just feeling like you can do it and making yourself do it. And lo and behold, you do.
Now, here's something else that I've witnessed. I've seen it as a kid, and I've witnessed it now as an adult. And I see it again primarily in elementary schools, which I really think that's like the breed. I really honestly feel like the elementary school level is where the breeding ground is for your future bullies in the junior high and middle schools and high schools that kids unfortunately are then honestly dealing with full-on bullies. But I know when I was in school, a lot of our teachers, when kids would get in fights on the playground, and my son and I just recently had this conversation, they would let the kids kind of fight it out and not really get involved until, of course, if they're shoving back each other back and forth and screaming at each other, the teachers. And I know it's changed a lot now, but originally they would just kind of let you fight. I know it was like that for my parents, when they were growing up in the 60s and 70s. I'm sure it was same for you when you were growing up. It was like that in the 80s. It was like that in the 90s. And unless they were pounding each other to a bloody pulp pretty much, or pulling each other's hair out when it came to girls. Yeah, they'd pretty much let them fight it out. Now, I know, especially now, because at least where I'm at, we have school resource officers, which I didn't even have that when I was growing up in high school at all. And they have them, all over here in the middle schools, the junior high schools, and the high schools. They have school resource. I mean, these are actual sworn in officers that work at the school to kind of, keep their eye out to curtail the bullying as much as possible. And but I've seen when I've been on field trips, like I said, in elementary school, and I saw, even when I was in school, that when stuff like that happened, or like when parents were there, and they're supposed to be watching the group. If they saw it was a victim, they wouldn't really say anything because they're just like, they'll work it out. Unfortunately, I think that the kids who are the bulliers or who are going to maybe eventually become a bully as they get older in life, I think that they feel like, I can get away with it. It's kind of like, I stole, the candy bar, nobody caught me, so I'll steal, the next thing. Next thing they're stealing, diamonds out of somebody's house, and, they get arrested. I'm like, I can't believe I got caught. Because they got away with it, the small things. It's like that little, at least you said it builds. And I wonder, because I look at parents, like this one field trip I went on with my daughter, there was some boys and they weren't listening, and they were kind of picking on another kid. And the two parents that were overseeing that particular group of kids weren't saying anything. And I finally left my group, went over to that group, and made them stop. And, of course, the two parents who were over the group just kind of looked at me like, who in the heck do you think you are? And I'm sort of thinking,
oh, yeah.
Did you not want to say
and
anything?
And they talked about
that
badly after the trip was over. You can be sure of it. But you know what? Could it be that those parents are completely non-assertive? There are parents that are not assertive enough to discipline their own children. I see a lot of children parents who let the children rule the roost. And the children call the shots. And the children complain and whine and squall, and the parents bow to it. And sometimes I wonder if parents don't need to remember, and we could get on a whole other topic about this. I know that parents work today, and I know there's a lot of guilt, so we want to do everything to make our kids happy because we feel guilty that we can't give them this or we can't spend the time that we'd like to or whatever. But I think when it comes to discipline, today's parents are very lax, and they make excuses for their children, and but I think that it boils down to maybe not being assertive enough to tell your child, look, this is how it's going to be, period, and take that high road of being a good disciplinarian, which is the hardest road. It's much easier to be to let your child have their way, and you tell yourself, well, you know, I want to be understanding, I want to be kind. And you know what? That makes you feel better. But is it really in the best interest of your child to not be assertive enough, to not only show them the right way, but to show them that it's okay to be assertive? You know, I think a lot of times we get mixed up with wanting to say, oh, well, that makes my child happy. Well, is it really best for your child, or is it just what makes you feel better, you know? And if you really dig down, you may find, as a parent, sometimes we're a little selfish because we want to feel good about things. We want to know, well, I did this for my child, and I bailed him out of this, and I took care of this for him, and I did this for him, and that makes me feel so good that I can do all that. But did it really help your child? It made you feel better. Was it really in your child's best interest, or was it in your best interest? And sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk, you know, kind of have a talk, because we're getting toward the end of the show, and I kind of want to talk a little bit about, you know, if you're a parent and you have a bully in your family, and I'm pretty fortunate that I don't have, out of my three, one that seems to be a bully now. I know, you know, obviously you have, your kids are going to, of course, fight amongst themselves if you have more than one, and it doesn't matter what age is, because, like I said, there's an eight-year difference between my little daughter and my son, and they fight just as much as my two daughters, who are closer together in age with each other. And luckily, you know, there's no, out of the three of them, not one of them out of the three dominates any of the others. I mean, obviously my son, since he is a teen, tends to be a little bit more of a dominant force just because of that. But, and I'm the oldest out of four, and none of us tend to really be a bully in our family, you know, amongst each other, or what I've seen as we've grown up as kids. But I do know that there can, you know, be that factor in your family. I have a friend that I love dearly, and I like most of her kids. She has one kid, though. She
has the one bully,
kid.
Right?
Yeah, and he is. He you can tell he's a little manipulator. You can just see. You can see that he knows how to play his parents. You know, I mean, he plays like he's the victim. But the second their head is turned, he does stuff. But and the thing that makes me really, it makes me want to just sometimes take them and just, you know, smack them around a little bit, my friend. Smack her around
a little
bit.
You're off in a corner all by yourself.
Yeah, because not just myself, but other people have gone up to her and said, hey, you know, your kid does this. And she's like, no, he doesn't do that. I talked to him, and he said that, you know, he didn't start it, and that he's always been, and she, like, believes her kid. And I know as parents you want to believe your kid, but I'm like, you know what, if you've had more than, like, three people come up to you and say, hey, your kid is, you know, a problem.
Exactly. That sounds like one of those situations where that child has managed to get the upper hand, and the parent doesn't really know how to confront the child. And so if you deny something, you don't have to deal with it. You have to acknowledge it in order to deal with it. So she has to acknowledge that, yes, my child's a bully, and that's the thing that's hard to swallow. And as far as, you know, what do you do if your child is the bully? I think the first thing you have to do is acknowledge it. And I think that's the biggest step right there, just like you said, and just like I've seen many times in school. We've had to call parents about their child that may – and then you have to know what – I mean, bullying isn't just conflict. You know, bullying is typified by an imbalance in power. Usually the bully has some kind of power over the target – either size, social relationships, financial. There's an imbalance of power. When the power is equal, it's usually a conflict that can be resolved. But a bully tends to have power over another child. It's something they do over and over and over again. And their intent is to hurt or gain some kind of power. But I think you have to acknowledge that my child is doing these things. And you can't constantly say, oh, they're not. If you start getting calls, like you said, more than one, two, or three people are calling you, it's not the school trying to bother you. Believe me, at the school, we have better things to do than call parents on a regular basis about their child's behavior. It's our least favorite call to make anyway. So you have to acknowledge it. And then I think you have to really dig into what type of bullying is going on and where and who it's happening to. Bottom line is the child needs to learn empathy. But the child also needs to find a way to meet whatever need that bullying is satisfying? Does it make him feel really powerful? If so, is there another way to gain power? Can we start playing sports and be the captain of the football team? Or is it just a real enjoyment of manipulation? Is there another way we can meet that need? Can you learn to play chess or something? Those are real simplistic, but typically every behavior has some kind of goal, and it's sometimes very subconscious. But if you can find another way to meet the need, a positive way to meet the need, you can solve the problem. But ultimately, when a child continually mistreats others, you have to punish consistently. You just have to. You can talk about it all day long, and you can say you need to treat Johnny nicer, and how would you feel if you were Johnny, and let's get on the football team, and we'll crack heads out there, and you can do all that. But if you still don't see improvement, and you still see that your child, you're still getting calls, your child is deliberately making life hard for others, there have to be consequences. Because if you don't impose some consequences, it is pretty much, common knowledge, but research tells us that these children that are allowed to bully, they do end up very often becoming domestic abusers. They are likely to join gangs. They are likely to get in trouble all the way down the line for not following rules. They just don't have as good a result in life as those that don't. And so you're really doing them a favor. And, again, the earlier you can stop it. And I think, you know, you can take excuses for just so long, and then there have to be consequences. And they have to be very consistent. And a lot of times a child that's a bully that's able to manipulate parents, they say, oh, I'll be grounded for a week, but then they'll let me off in a week. And if you do not do what you – if you say you're going to impose a consequence, if you say it, you need to mean it. And if you mean it, you need to stick by it, even if it breaks your heart while you're doing it. If you said you're going to be grounded for 3 weeks, think long and hard. If the prom falls in that 3 weeks, don't make it for 3 weeks because you're going to break on the prom. You know, be consistent. Be thoughtful with the discipline, but apply it consistently.
I totally agree. We actually have a question in our chat room here, Keisha. We have George, and he brings up Columbine, which I totally remember this. I was in high school when Columbine happened, and really awful thing. You know, obviously, you know, everybody knows the history of that because you had the two shooters that did a lot of damage. And, you know, I know there – and the question basically that George has tagged to it is, you know, obviously there's been the speculation from talking, you know, to the kids and as they've gotten older, as it's been brought up again, as, you know, different organizations have started to kind of stop bullying, is that, you know, these two were probably bullied. And so it's, I guess the biggest thing is how can you tell, I mean, because this was definitely an extreme case of what can happen with, you know, definitely the division, like you said, with you know, social status, basically. But, you know, since you're in school, you know, and you're working with kids and you're a counselor, I mean, is there really a way to tell when there's a kid that is either being bullied or is such a forceful bully, you know, on either side of the spectrum that could lead to, and the reason I bring this up is 6 months before Columbine happened, I had my best friend gunned down at a party. And she wasn't the intended target. It was actually her brother, and it was, and the reason why he was a target was because it was a bully situation, and it was basically a very aggressive bully target, and her brother was the target, and she just happened to get in the way and ended up getting shot versus her brother. But right. So I noticed, so how can you tell if you have, you know, basically a volatile situation like that where you can have a kid that's going to snap from being bullied or a bully that's going to snap because they hate their target so much that, you know, may take that aggression a little to the extreme?
Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent question, because the ones that go under the radar are the Columbine type thing. I would say that I may have said earlier, often kids do not report that they're being bullied. They're afraid of being called a snitch. They're afraid that there's going to be retaliation. You know, there's that assertiveness thing. Now, from what I recall about Columbine, after it happened, it seemed to be suddenly common knowledge at that school that those boys had been teased and picked on. So it makes you say, well, you know, if everybody knew it, why didn't anybody step in? And I can't answer that except to say that sometimes it's a real fine line as to, well, would they just play it around? Is this something everybody just, they play, there? Is it okay? Was it, you know, it's easy to look back and say, well, wow, maybe I should have stepped in, but at the time I thought everybody was just playing. I didn't know it was serious. We encourage from early elementary school, tell somebody, tell somebody, tell somebody. Obviously, these boys didn't. As far as, can you ever predict someone that's going to come to school with a gun because they had enough? I don't know that you can ever predict that. I think, again, open communication, assertiveness with parents, school officials. I think you have to get rid of the fear of telling. And as far as the bullies themselves, I think you have to really be open-minded about that because very often, like was the case at Columbine, a lot of those people that were teasing were the cool people at school. You know, they were the jocks. They were the football stars. You know, well, football coaches like to keep their football stars. They don't want them in trouble and off the team. I know that a lot of times with girls, they're the school, they're the teacher pets. They're the girls that will help with everything. They're making good grades. They do all the right things. So even if somebody did tell the teacher, well, she's really mean, oh, no, not Sally. Sally helps with all kind of things. Sally volunteers at the teen center. Sally does this, Sally does that. So a lot of times there's just this total lack of awareness. I wish I could say how we could predict the ones that are going to go really awry because I think we'd all just predict it and take care of it. I would have to say if I just had to answer it in a real simplistic way, teach empathy and teach assertiveness. And if you're a school official, keep your eyes open. And when you see something that even looks like it, pull people aside individually and say, hey, he said he was just playing, but how did you really feel when they said that to you? And try to get to the bottom of it. And then, you know, it doesn't have to be a snitch situation. Once again, the other person doesn't have to know you pulled this one aside. Hey, man, you know, when you called him a girly man or whatever you did, you know, he didn't say anything. He acted like it was cool, but, man, if that were me, I wouldn't like that. Why don't you back off a little? See, as a teacher, I could say something like that to somebody. Might help, might not, but it's a step towards it. I think that's really what you have to do is be observant, step in when you can, and teach assertiveness and teach empathy. That's probably simplistic. But if we could, if there was a way to prevent those kinds of things, I'd pass that along too.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, with it even being an ever-growing problem. I mean, it's something I think, you know, unfortunately, we're going to continually, you know, as a culture, you know, learn to deal with and find new ways of handling the situation. I mean, to me, I think sometimes what makes it such a fine line is. Besides the fact, you know, he made the comment, Keisha, you know, that you look at something like, well, you know, maybe they're just joking around, so you don't want to say anything. I think sometimes, you know, you're on that fine line, like, well, am I being too much of a busybody getting in other people's business? Because a lot of people don't want to be tagged for that. And then the other thing is, you know, as well, is especially for parents, when it comes into, like, you know, teaching your kid, you know, cause and effect, you know, and for every reaction and there's a reaction to what they do. I mean, a lot of parents, you know, they won't even, like, tap their kid's hand when they, like, you know, go to grab the candy bar that they're told not to take that they try and now take and put in their pocket because, like, oh, my gosh, if everybody in the supermarket sees that, they're going to label me as a child abuser. It's like, I think we've gotten too scared and too fanatical at the same time. And so people aren't sure how to react, I think. And it's such a hard thing, and we're on a fine line, and to me, I'm like, you know, I'd rather be, you know, a little, you know, maybe off the mark and wrong than not do anything and then something terrible happens, you know?
Yeah, I think parents have allowed themselves to be afraid of some things that maybe, you know, like you said, people, oh, I'm a child. You know, if your child throws a tantrum at the store and you have to pop their bottom good, I don't think that's child abuse, you know?
And I agree.
And I think sometimes parents say, well, you know, I can't spank my child because they're going to call DCS. You know what? That's garbage. Let me tell you something. I work in a school district, and I've seen kids black and blue, and I've called DCS, and they don't come. So don't tell me DCS is coming to get you because you've disciplined your child. That is a lazy parent's answer to not disciplining. And that's just a little soapbox there. But that is very often the case. Parents will just That's an excuse not to confront the child. And you know what? You have to confront children. You have to teach them. That's part of the parenting job. It's hard. It's very hard. But, you know, nobody ever said it was going to be real easy. It's a tough job. But you can't say, oh, well, DCS is going to come and get me because I've disciplined my child. No, they rarely come get children. When they do, it's far more than discipline.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're down. I want to say we're down to our hours, so I don't want to keep us. I reply to a comment that someone was asking about firearms, and I said that we'd address that in a later show because I know that's definitely another subject about families and kids and guns in the house, and So we'll have to address that in another show. But you know, it's great having you on the show, Keisha. I'm excited to be doing the show with you once a month. I know that we have a lot of topics that we can cover obviously each time, and for those you know who are listening, definitely you know check out the links, especially Keisha's links to the Examiner out there in Nashville, because she's got all kinds of stuff in there, from bullying to parenting tips, you know, just tons of information. She's a great resource, so we're excited to have you, like I said, as a host here on the Family Matter Show at World of Ink Network. And you can also catch some of her articles on the Family Matters blog as well. So everybody have a good night, and thanks again, Keisha, for joining us on this new show.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
And for those who are listening, sorry, my phone's getting staticky, everybody. For those who are listening, there is no show tomorrow, but on Friday is my show with Marcia Cook, the Writing Mama. We will have I'll make sure I get his last name right. It's Yaney, and we're going to be talking about his book, Life is Not a Candy Store. It's The Way to the Candy Store, and it's actually a good show to listen to if you're listening tonight, because it is a follow-up to these kind of issues with teens and children. The book is a spiritual guide for teens for the road of life, and it does address basically the consequences on your choices, and basically how to set goals and make sure you're going down the right road in life. So definitely tune in. That show is at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Friday, and have a good night. Bye-bye.